Hello, this is Michael Stauffer for LittleShootMatters.org. Today I'm interviewing Bill Perenboom, who's running for Little Shoot Village Trustee. Welcome, Bill.
Hi, Mike. Nice to meet you.
Let's begin with some basic questions. Why are you running for office? Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're interested in serving the public as a Little Shoot Village Trustee.
All right. I'm married and I have three adult children. The oldest, Jill, is going for her doctorate at FSU. My second oldest, Katie, is a freshman at Carroll in Waukesha. And my youngest, Emily, she's going to be going to Eau Claire next fall. So I'm going to be an empty nester, and I was on the board previously. And one of the reasons I didn't run for re-election back then was there was a lot going on with the kids in high school, so time commitments. And I was also on the county board at that time, so I decided to drop off of the village board. But now that I've got some time again, I enjoyed it when I was on there. It's challenging, but I find the politics of it enjoyable. Right now I'm working as an HVA specialist with Winnebago County. I've been there for 12 years. I'm a steam fitter by trade. I started in 1978 with Local 458 in Appleton, which has now become Local 400, and I am still a member there. I am back to the village board. I was on there before, and the county board, and I think I have time and the knowledge to focus and study the current issues.
You were on the on several committees as well, village committees, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I still am on the plan commission right now. I was probably 10 of the last 14 years. I believe I dropped off for 4 years in there when my kids were both in high school. I may have been off of there, but been on there for quite a bit. That's where I originally started was with the plan commission.
Okay, let's move on to a question about the economy. The economy is on most people's minds right now, especially jobs. According to the Census Bureau, in Little Shoot, one out of every five jobs are created by small businesses with less than 20 employees. Another two out of the five are from mid-sized businesses with 20 to 100 employees. And over 95% of the businesses in Little Shoot are either small or mid-sized. How will you support existing small and mid-sized businesses and encourage the development of new ones?
Well, first off, that's a lot of numbers to toss around when you get into the percentages and that. And Chuck Fisher has always had a saying about people who use statistics that I don't recall, but it wasn't flattering. But by those same statistics you give, then two out of five jobs would be created by large companies. So what I have a problem with is giving any single group an advantage because they can twist the numbers to say we need help more than somebody else. You know, I would argue that those 5% of large companies employ a majority of the people in the village compared to the 95% because they're employing thousands of people. But I think we need to treat all businesses equal and the same. And that brings up one of the big problems I have is we focus so heavily on trying to save our downtown. The businesses there get incredible benefits other village businesses don't get. I mean, they get free parking, they get snow removal, they don't pay fees for stormwater. People on the east end of Main Street are doing an incredible job out there, but they get no concessions from the village. They tote the barge all by themselves down there. And it would seem we should also concentrate on keeping and helping those business areas. Same with the north end of town out on N. They, you know, a tavern owner out there has to take care of his own parking lot. A tavern owner downtown, parking lot's provided, plowed. It's a lot of extra fees and maintenance and costs that people not in the downtown are forced to incur, but yet we don't ever say they need help. So I think we need to look at all businesses, and I can't just say we need to concentrate on saving the downtown.
When you talk about being fair and treating all businesses the same, are there any specific things that you've heard the small and mid-sized businesses say to you that they need that the village is currently ignoring?
Well, if you would look at the restaurants and the supper clubs, for example, they think it's incredibly unfair when they, for instance, ask for their curbs to be cleaned of snow up to the curb to provide on-street parking. And in the meantime, the village is clearing all the lots downtown for a tavern or a restaurant or a supper club down here. They see it as a huge injustice. They have to provide the required amount of parking stalls for their business on a private lot that they are charged stormwater fees for. Mm-hmm. Nobody in the downtown is charged stormwater fees if they use a municipal lot. It seems to be a very big injustice between the two businesses. You're putting a lot of cost on somebody out on Rose Hill Road to run a business that they wouldn't incur downtown.
We have some additional questions here about business later on, about the downtown in particular. But let's move on to the next question about government finances. When we think about government finances, many of us immediately think taxes, but taxes are only one way to finance government. Fees are another means of generating revenue, sometimes a hotly debated means. Fees can be paid directly to the village or to third parties for village-mandated products and services. How do you view the use of fees versus taxes, that balance to fund the activities of the village of Littlechute?
I touched on the fee thing a little bit in the last question with the stormwater fees that people are forced to pay. And originally, when we started charging fees, the point of them was to get the non-taxable group into paying their percentage of the service provided.
Yes.
And that's basically where the fire protection fee came from and the stormwater fees. There were large areas, school districts, churches, cemeteries, that were tax exempt from these fees. And the street cleaning, all of that was originally how it was intended to do, was to balance that for everybody. They would pay for these services provided. Well, that fee mechanism has now gotten so far out of control that we simply say we won't raise taxes, we'll just charge a fee. Well, village president Roy Akers used to say we should charge a fee for every service provided in this village. And for every fee charge, your tax roll should go down in equal and fair amount. And I agree with that completely. If you're going to charge me a fee to pick up my garbage, then my taxes should have gone down a comparable amount. So it's very easy to sit back and say, we didn't raise taxes, we just raised fees. Well, I'm sure you've heard it from every candidate, that's still coming out of my pocket. So I think we need to get the fee thing back under control and just stop using that as the easy way out every time. You know, I sat at that meeting with the garbage fee and heard more than one trustee say, it's the state's fault. We can't do anything about it. So they passed the fee on. Well, sometimes when my income goes down, I have to make adjustments at home. I think the village needs to get these fees back under control.
You mentioned that past president, village president Roy Akers had an approach toward fees that said that every time somebody uses a service, a village service, they ought to be paying a fee. And that sentiment lines up with what I've heard from a number of people, that if you call something a fee and it's to pay for a service that you can't avoid, it's a tax. And so it's important that when we talk about fees, that we only talk about services we can avoid, things like pool fees.
Sure.
and that kind of a thing. You had mentioned stormwater and fire protection. Those are only business-related fees. Isn't that correct?
No, every resident is charged an ERU on their water bill, one residential unit on their water
right.
bill, which started out, I believe, at $2 or $3, went up to $8, and I believe it's back down $1 this year on that. So, yeah, everybody is charged fire protection fee. You're charged a meter fee, but I believe that's on the water department.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Believe me, every resident is absorbing these fees. Now, yes, you don't need to take a garbage container from the village if you want to hoof it out to the landfill on your own. Now, that's the justification in saying it's not required. It's I don't know of anybody who's not using that. But I would be remiss if I didn't say the village is in the very best financial hands with Dale Hogg. Yeah. The man is an absolute genius financially, and his ability, when I was on the board, for him to bring a thing like a village budget down to my level and walk me through the many, many steps of it. He's just one of the finest people I have ever met in government, and he is a gem.
And he's willing, when anyone has questions about finances, to spend the time with you. And I suspect that he then works late when he takes time out, because he does have a lot to do and a lot of responsibilities. But you're right, he's very, very good at talking at whatever level you want to talk at about the village finances.
Yes, and the time element too. When Michael, my first time through this board, when I got on here, I was mad about one issue, like a lot of people are when they get on here. I was just going to tear into this place. Dale pulled me aside and said, come on into my office. I'll show you how a budget works. You ever have a question, you come knock on the door and you're welcome in. And for 8 years, the slightest question I had, if I walked up to the counter, he would wave me in. If I was working late, he would say, I'll be here till 6. Yeah, it's rare you go by and his light isn't on. I mean, he was a huge help to me.
Okay, let's move on to our next question about transparency in government. Wisconsin's public record law requires open access to village records for all citizens. However, getting copies of village documents can sometimes be complicated. For example, information packets given to village trustees in open session sometimes include documents that visitor packets don't have. Also, announcements about village contracts and agreements often aren't widely publicized. How do you propose making village records as freely available as possible to the public?
On the first part of that, as far as the providing packets to the audience, I do understand why they don't print up, you know, a dozen full-blown board packets, because quite truthfully, very rarely do people come to the meetings. Now, I certainly don't think printing one or two extra full packets without the closed session material would be out of line. The first time when I was on the board, if somebody in the audience wanted something that was in the board packet, Judd Vandenhabel would hand his over and he would look at mine with me. I mean, it's a fairly easy fix, but yeah, I think they should provide one or two extra full packets there. I mean, they're printing them up anyway. Mm-hmm. On the contracts, I agree completely. There's no reason bids and awarded contracts can't be posted on the website, and they should be. I mean, there's a lot of questions people have on why this contractor was or wasn't awarded, especially if you don't go with low bid, which they very rarely don't go with, but there are times where you make exceptions, and that should be clear. First and foremost, to close, meetings have to stop. I talked to a former board member that was on with me in the turn of the century, and we couldn't remember more than one a month. It was a rarity to have a closed session. I, for the life of me, don't understand what this staff is requiring that takes sometimes over an hour at these meetings to discuss with the board. You know, I hear when you try to have input, they'll say, well, you can't micromanage the board or the staff. But when it's a time, it seems when it's time for a really tough decision, then we run into closed sessions over and over again. And I just can't possibly understand it's rare not to have a closed session nowadays. I don't know what is going on in them, and I don't know what's driving them. It's got to stop.
Yes, and there are some contracts where negotiations should be kept secret for a time. The public employee union contract is one example recently. There are also developer contracts where developers come and pitch an idea directly to the board, and some of those make sense. What you're saying, though, about these long closed sessions, hours in length, One of the things you said was that you should only have maybe one a month or less. That would still be a dozen a year, and some people even think that a dozen a year are too many. This is a tough question, but how do you draw the line between having a closed session so that you're not talking about in public about private information, especially contracts with developers and the like, or exploratory discussions, and the kind of closed sessions that we seem to get into from time to time, where it's every meeting and there's an hour or an hour and a half of closed session?
Well, I don't recall in my previous term that the Village Board ever got into negotiating with the public union. They had their lawyer, we had ours, and basically those two sides knew where they were going to end up. They generally reached that place, and we would be presented a contract offer from the union that we were fairly sure they were going to accept. And other than maybe one glaring problem that we would have a disagreement with, it was rare. We usually were brought a contract that was ready for approval. And I don't know if that's changed by who's negotiating them or how it's being negotiated, but the Village Board didn't sit down with representatives from the union and bargain in closed session. We were brought the final contract offer. The developer agreements, I would think 90% of that would be done with staff in the staff's offices between them and their lawyers or the developers. And when you had something very close, you would bring it for discussion and move on with it. Because I don't know what's going on in the closed sessions, I can't say if that's something we used to debate in open session or not. What does seem a little surprising is you can have hour-long closed sessions and not have a result of that closed session posted in any following minutes, which is what happens in these development agreements or these meetings that you have. At some point, you need to inform the public of what was accomplished in those closed sessions. They can't just stay closed and then say, here we are. So, again, without having been in them, I don't know what they're discussing in them. But for some reason, I agree, 12 a year is too many, and we thought maybe one a month. But, you know, it was usually personal evaluations, contracts, and that was it. Everything else was open.
Well, and the closed sessions tie back into the whole question about announcing contracts too. Have you given any thought to how you make contracts that are signed by the village public, like an announcement of every contract or some such thing?
I would think that the website is the place to do it. I mean, you have links and tabs to just about anything. I don't know what big deal it would be to have a link to current contracts or current bids and recent signed contracts. And I don't know if you would necessarily have to make the contract available on the web, but if you knew it was there, you could go down to the Village Hall and request to see it. Now, I think, again, it's a technology thing that's fairly simple to do.
If it's just an announcement of the contract and the particulars about the contract, and then you can go down to the village offices and actually read the contract.
Correct.
If you want. That would seem to be fairly straightforward.
Most counties post that they have bids for let, and people can see what they're involved, and it'll say when you go back to check what day it's going to be posted. If it's going to be open on March 28th at 2 p.m., they will, within a week, show who was awarded the contract, and typically they'll show the tally sheet.
Lastly, let's come back to talking a little bit about the downtown area. In recent years, there's been some development along Main Street. Much of the focus has been on the Dutch Boys and the Windmills projects, but these developments are both west of the Village Hall. And as you've pointed out earlier, there's quite a large stretch of Main Street that's to the east of the Village Hall. In fact, from the east of the hall all the way down to the east end of the village. How do we develop the downtown area east of the Village Hall? How do you think we can keep existing businesses and attract new ones to this area?
Are you specifically talking to the area that would, you know, for for lack of a better term, where the colored concrete runs out downtown as being.
I suppose that would be one
trying.
Way to say it.
And again, I'm not a big fan of pushing money into an area that really doesn't show any signs of people being interested in developing here. You know, the location where the windmill is proposed, they took four or five houses down for that. It was a residential area. It wasn't a downtown business area. Same with Walgreens. They took houses out of those areas. They're doing it now behind what used to be Rhinobos and Gonnering Realty. They're buying houses and knocking them down, continually thinking this is where business wants to come and locate. It was a residential area. You can't just make it a business area by saying we need a good downtown. And that really bothers me that they have taken residences down and claim that the downtown area is a business area. It was a business residential mix. There were houses between businesses. And just because you buy them and knock them down doesn't mean somebody wants to build a business there. Otherwise, the ones here would be full, and they're not. This goes back to, you know, if you go out and look what they did north of Evergreen and Ballard, they had to get that industrial land ready to go in case some giant company came in and wanted it. So we put utilities in, got everything out there. It sits empty. We have a business park right across Highway 41. Basically sits empty. Nothing's going on there. A bunch of detention ponds and a bunch of for sale signs. Sitting empty. Now, we come downtown, we buy houses, we level them. Somebody want to build here? No. We try with Dutch Boys. Let's try and build where people don't want to be. That doesn't work. And now to top it off, we're going to sell residential lots out by Evan Pond. When are we going to learn we're supposed to be governing the village, not acting as developers? They have to learn that difference. We are here to govern the village.
Well, and the point you make about the windmill too, which will be fabulous when it's completed. But you pointed out a number of houses were knocked down. Also, Tucker's closed down and
right.
was removed. Similarly, a little farther to the east of the village hall, can't remember the name, but there was a barber shop that was. Oh.
And a tavern and a gas station.
That's right, and the gas station. I'd forgotten about that.
So, again, we seem to be experts at knocking stuff down, thinking people are going to come there. I mean, take a look down 00 now. You can come down N and 00, which should be a thriving center of business. And you can see from the police station to the high school, there's nothing between you anymore. We can't just keep leveling everything in town. I don't know what the point of that is, and there doesn't seem to be any reason to it, and any reason that they should be allowed to do it. Just because I own, you know, I can come in and buy this whole thing, knock it down, and just, what happened to the tax base that was there? It's gone. Van Zeeland Manufacturing, gone. It's a pile of mud. I assume we're going to lose a substantial amount of tax base off of that building. And all the other ones that go. So I don't think we have a real good track record as developers. You know, that's a private individual that's knocking them down there, but we're doing our share downtown, and then we wonder why nobody wants to build here. We have an industrial park that finally sold out from 1970 whenever. We don't have a very good track record as developers, and we're not developers. It's time to quit trying to be a developer. We got developers that can do that.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. It's been a pleasure interviewing and hearing your vision for a better Little Chute. I appreciate it.
Nice to meet you, Michael.